So hi, I'm Jen Reeves. Thanks for coming. This panel is focused on a passion that is really important to me, and it happened because I've been at South By enough times, I thought that there's a community here that is super smart, and I wanted to have an opportunity to speak about some of the challenges of the special needs world and how maybe technology folks could listen and we can start a brainstorm. And so that's what this panel is focused on. So I'm Jen Lee Reeves on the Twitter.
My name is Kate Canterbury. I have a personal Twitter account under Guavalicious, which if you don't, it's up there on the screen. And then I have a professional account at Kate Canterbury.
And I'm Robert Rummel Hudson, and I'm on Twitter as Rumhud, which is my unprofessional account, which is all I'm going to go for today.
That's how we roll. Before we go in too deeply, we wanted to make sure that there's an important note. Excuse me. What was really important to us is that our perspective is from the perspective of special needs parents, and not as voices or representatives of the special needs community. We want the ideas and topics that are raised here that can help them as a whole, but we are speaking as parents, and that's just an important differentiation to be made during the session. Yay. So here's some baseline assumptions that we wanted to throw out there before we go into some of our perspectives of our experiences in the special needs communities. We want to brainstorm, and based on these assumptions, that special needs communities are fractured. There are so many different types, and inside each set, there are all kinds of other subsets. Parents often do not get the support they need offline, and technology is a pioneering tool for therapy. So where can tech help with these baseline assumptions? And that's where we head. So let me tell you a little bit about my story and what brings me here. I am many things. One of them is an advocate for my children. I have a website called Born Just Right where I focus on my experience as a parent of a limb different child. My daughter was born with a humerus, and that's it on the left side. So she has a right hand, so she's just right-handed, and she was born just right. There you go. I also teach interactive and engagement at the Missouri School of Journalism, and I'm the interactive director at the NBC affiliate KOMU in Columbia, Missouri. All of those combined have been a very powerful experience and have helped me try to be an advocate for my child and for in the special needs world. And technology has been really important. I truly believe that technology has made me the special needs mom that I am today. The website that I have was created before she was even born and before I even knew she had a difference. And it was my first outlet and the first way I was able to connect with parents and experts in 2005 and 2006. And back then, I wasn't on Twitter. I had Facebook, but I didn't have a parent subset of people that I could talk to or grown-ups. It was my college students. That was it. So my website and commenters were one of the first ways, and searching for a Yahoo group was really where I started. Without that experience, I wouldn't have found the resources, and I feel very fortunate that I've had that experience. The trick with technology and all of these various social communities that are out there that are offering support is that lately our challenge is that many communities are replicating communities. In the special needs world, there are incredibly all kinds of silos of different types of needs and different support structures based on those. Some are really well built, some aren't. But in my opinion, there are some similarities, especially when it comes to emotional support and finding often there's money and overarching support sources that if these other communities could talk to each other, possibly more families would feel supported sooner and feel like they can advocate better. But now, not only are there silos, social media has made it possible for anyone to create their little group to support what they need. So that means you've got a group all in one subset, and they aren't all talking to each other. And some people have some great information. Some are misinformed. And how can we help that? That's a fascinating trend that I'm watching happen a lot. So the trick I see is, what could the tech world do? There are so many smart people. How could we possibly help all of these connections? And I'm not saying get rid of these little subsets. How can we help each of these little groups make it easier to connect to information and have a massive database, massive connections to make everyone aware of each other? I don't know. That's why I throw it out there. That's my first challenge, and Kate has some perspectives as well.
Hi, my name is Kate Canterbury, and unlike Jen and Robert, my main presence in the web world is not identified with special needs. It's part of my life. Both of my 5-year-old twins, and they both have what they call invisible disabilities. I should have had my first picture. I have pictures of my girls up on the first slide, and by looking at them, you would have no idea that there's anything that is off about them at all. That's Evie on the left and Jane right there beside her. And so my perspective on coming into this is talking about, you know, how can I incorporate, you know, I call myself an advocate, thinker, mother, friend. How can I incorporate that into advocating for special needs? And I do appreciate that support people find online, but my passion is using technology to help children. There are so many people that do not have the support they need, but what they really need is therapy for their kids. They need to find out how they can, you know, access these things that people in larger cities have. And so my missions as a parent and as an advocate online is to, one, write honestly about parenting, to write about the struggles that parents of special needs kids and just parents of typical children go through, to be a voice for invisible disabilities, to speak up for the communities that are smaller, that are not given a voice in this larger scene. It's a funny word to use, but I kind of call it the glamorous special needs of autism and you know, physical disabilities, and these small voices of ours get lost in that when, you know, your child is suffering from a million little diagnoses that don't add up to anything. You really just want the help. You know that you're not going to get the support because who the hell knows what you're talking about? but you need to know, like, what can you do? So my third mission is to push the technological community to partner with the special needs community. I'm sure that all of us in the technology world know that we think a little bit differently. It's just kind of natural when you talk to someone. And I think a lot of that for people do come from the, you know, so-called disabilities they have in their life. I know that my daughter, Jane, thinks completely differently than anyone else. The best example I can give is that she is was wearing a dress that had polka dots on it one day. And my friend said, "I love your polka dot dress." And she said, "I don't have polka dots on my dress. I have triangles." And they were the little white pieces of patterns that were formed from the polka dots. And so it's like she sees triangles. And that's people that are working in technology. I think that they all see triangles. So how can I push those people to hack technology to benefit special needs? And that's what this is. That's a picture of Jen's daughter, Jordan, playing with the Wii. And so parents are already hacking technology for therapy use. There's a lot of people using YouTube to upload therapy videos and people going and working through physical therapies through that. Physical therapists that are doing very specialized therapy upload those as well. So people that are in smaller cities and towns like mine can use it. But the next step is getting the technology community to really step up to support it. And of course, the one session I really wanted to attend is during this is Hack the Connect. I really think that we should have a big push to use the Connect as a physical therapy game. There's a lot that could be done with the Connect and home could buy a Kinect and a package and a game for under $1,000. And as Robert and Jen know well, often what we use with our children costs three or four times that. And I say, let's make technology legitimate. I want to be able to deduct my iPad if I had an iPad. Don't. But my husband does. We're able to use apps on the iPad to work with our girls on reading and on language development. There's apps for fine motor skills on there. There's apps to help behavioral therapy as well. And I want to make it a drive to push the agencies and our country to stop spending money inefficiently. You know, we could be buying families $500 iPads, getting, you know, companies to donate apps. You know, I was talking at the PBS Kids Breakfast, and you know, they would be willing to donate apps for people to learn. If we have a push, if families had that technology in their hand, we can have that graphs given to them. So how do we work to make that legitimate? And I really think that what we need to do, what Jen was saying, we need to stop fracturing the community to make everyone wants to be the voice. And I understand that. We all want to be web famous. But we're not doing our kids any good by separating ourselves. We need to use the unifying voice of special needs to really legitimize the problems out there. I mean, it's great that you're, you know, telling the world how much you love your kid, and it's great that you're giving support to someone that may not think about that, but what about, you know, actually putting something that can help that child in their hands? What about putting an iPad or an iPod Touch into that disabled child's hand and allowing them to talk to their friends for the first time? To me, that's a lot more important than being on USA Today or being on what is the Today Show that people...
Yeah.
There was Kelly Hampton, who I think is amazing. Yeah. But she's been all over the morning broadcast. Her daughter has Down syndrome, and she's doing a great job of setting parenthood. But I really want us to use that star power to help people. There's a lot more beyond support, and we need to make sure that that gets out there. And I really feel like Jen has been a really big inspiration for me. She's using her voice in the journalism and technological community to push that. And I don't have the expertise in that area, but what I do have is, you know, a voice online, and I want to use that voice to help people when I can.
Hooray.
Hi, I'm Robert. I have a daughter who is inexplicably 12 years old. I can't even, I say the words and they don't resonate. I'm like, how can a baby be 12 years old? Her name is Skylar. Skylar has a rare brain malformation called polymicrogyria, and it can manifest itself in different ways. For Skylar, it is primarily a speech issue, and it has basically robbed her of a lot of her her hard consonants. It's very, very difficult to understand her when she speaks. She sounds the same kind of speech you would hear from a child who's profoundly deaf and has been deaf since birth. A few years ago, I wrote a book about Skylar, and that sort of started the whole process of advocacy for me. I, like any other special needs parent, I was an advocate for my child. That's what we do. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it feels like that's all that we do in our lives. The lives that we had or the lives that we anticipated, they change, and they change dramatically, and this becomes the center of that life. But I wrote a book about Skylar, a memoir about the first 7 years of her life, and wrote it for her, I think, mostly, so that when she got older, she'd be able to look back and kind of see, to have a clear idea of what things were like early on and how she kind of got to where she was. And I wanted to write about all of that in a very clear and not in a sugar-coated way. You know, I've said before that the two things that I feel like I owe it to Skylar to give her is love and the truth. And, you know, like any other parent, I've made a lot of mistakes. But I feel like as long as I don't get too far from that central idea, that I'm going to do okay. For Skylar, the main issue, and certainly the issue, the place where technology comes into her life, was for assistive technology, the speech prosthesis devices. You may be familiar with some of these devices. I think probably the most famous person who uses a speech device would be Stephen Hawking. Now, his device is kind of a custom device that was made, I think, like 40 years ago. I mean, it was way ahead of the technology that's now in the hands of kids like Skylar. And that technology has been a life-changing technology for the kids who use it. It's hard to overstate how important that technology has been, and not just for giving speech, not just for, you know, giving a child or an adult the ability to create spoken dialogue in their lives. That's a huge part. That's a huge thing. And the first time, I mean, you know, we've seen it time and time again, the first time a child who has these kind of speech issues, the first time they use that device and hear spoken language coming out, it is invigorating in a way that's hard to anticipate and hard to explain. But in addition to the speech piece of that, these devices, this technology is teaching kids how language works, how language is constructed. And it is just phenomenal to watch. And to see a child who's been using this kind of speech technology for a number of years, watching their verbal speech and their spoken words actually begin to improve. Kids who were told that would actually never happen. Skylar's, I think, is a great example of that. I mean, we were told that was just spoken speech, verbal language was off the table for her, and it's very much not off the table now. People can certainly understand some of what she says, and with context, they can understand actually quite a bit of what she says. She functions in school without using the device as much as you might expect. So that language development piece is really important. The problem with this technology is that it is incredibly expensive. It's not the fault of the companies. They're making thousands of devices. If Apple were producing thousands of iPads instead of millions, you know, imagine what that price structure would look like. But those prohibitive costs, I mean, the cost for one of these advanced speech devices can start anywhere from like $7,000 up into like $10,000, $12,000, $14,000. They're very, very expensive. They're expensive enough that funding decisions basically are taken out of the hands of users and families. You know, most families, that's just not something that they can afford. And so those the decisions on, you know, the appropriate technology for kids, those decisions typically don't lie in the hands of parents, and maybe not even in the hands of teachers. These decisions get made by administrators a lot of the time, and they're primarily funding decisions. That's beginning to change, and it's changing in a way that's very, very exciting and is very, very public. When the iPod Touch was introduced a few years ago and then followed up by the iPad, it created the change that created the possibilities. It was a technological change, but it went so far beyond the technology. It went so far beyond, well, this is what we can do now with technology, because all of a sudden, you know, with people developing apps, a lot of speech language therapists, people that had worked in the industry for years, start to develop these apps. All of a sudden, now what became a $7,000 decision for a parent or for a school, mostly for schools, and a decision to try technology there's no guarantee that this is going to work, because we all know that there are no guarantees with these kids. For all of a sudden, now this becomes a decision that is about consumer electronics. You know, instead of having to fill out paperwork and lobby for months or even years to get funding from the government or get funding from a school district, now all of a sudden we're looking at the decision of purchasing an iPod Touch for, well, like $200, or an iPad starting at like $500 that you could go to the mall and start making these decisions for your kids. And suddenly parents, families, end users have these decision-making tools right in their hands. And it's been exciting. Social media has driven this to an extent that I don't think anyone has anticipated. And it's been exciting to watch. A lot of the new apps and a lot of this new technology is being pushed by users, and the companies are starting to you know, link back to like YouTube videos and demonstrations by these end users, by parents and by the kids and the adults who are using this technology. Social media has been driving that. The companies that produce the dedicated speech devices have been at a loss as to how to respond. Mm-hmm. And I don't know where that's going to go. I don't know if they're going to be left behind. I hope that they're not, because the language systems that Skyler started off with, I mean, they really saved her, and they've saved a lot of kids. But that model and the business model that drove that is going to change. It is already changing. For kids who require physical, like the head switches and the accessibility pieces, you know, that has been what's kept the dedicated speech device makers, that's what's kept them in business. And we'll probably keep them in business for a while, but it's not going to be forever. And consumer electronics are going to start to drive these decisions. Will the decisions always be intelligent decisions? Will parents and end users always make the appropriate decisions without the kind of guidance that they had before? Absolutely not. And there are going to be a lot of mistakes made, and there are going to be a lot of kids who maybe aren't getting the quality of technology that they could count on before. But that change is happening, and it's up to us in the community to figure out how to drive that change, and how to drive that change in a way that is appropriate and is going to be positive for the end users. So it's very exciting, and it's exciting to come here and see everyone's on their phones and everyone's on their iPads and anywhere else in the world to be like, oh, what about, everyone's so rude, I can't believe they're doing it. But here, it's part of this very rich experience. The picture that's up here right now was Skylar. We were having breakfast, and she was just on her iPod Touch that she uses. Her speech device, which has absolutely saved her, is the thing that we still have to convince her to use. The iPod Touch and the iPad, she's driving that. I've been getting texts this whole conference from Skylar telling me, I'm eating pizza, what are you doing? And this kind of communication. All I did was set that up for her at her request, and she's embraced that. And I think a lot of that is because that picture, if you look at that picture, you don't see a disability. You see there's nothing there.
The normalcy of these devices.
And that is the thing. That's the implementation. That's the biggest implementation obstacle for getting kids and even adults to use this kind of technology. But all of a sudden, in the hands of consumer electronics, Skylar's not the weird kid who can't talk. Skylar's the little girl using an iPod and playing Angry Birds and doing whatever else she's going to do, in addition to the communication piece that is already there. And it's something that we're going to transition to in school. It's something this is going to become her primary way of communicating. So I think from the tech world, we're looking at, you know, the interest is taken care of. The market is taken care of. It's there. It's, you know, the users, the families are hungry for this to grow
drive
and
the
to change.
Specialization of it.
And so now it's like handing that over to the tech world and saying, what can you do with this?
Right, and that was the goal of this session. We really do want to brainstorm. And if anyone would like to, we have a microphone because this is being recorded for a podcast. So if anyone wants to throw some ideas out there, come on up.
And I want to say real quick, several people have said to us on Twitter, all three of us are pretty involved in the special needs social media community. A lot of people have said they want to listen to the podcast after. So please, you know, this is really, we want people to talk, not just us. We talk all the time.
Well, I have a question on the, tell me the name of the device that your daughter uses.
Right now, her dedicated speech device.
Dedicated speech device.
Is,
okay.
It's new a, term it's a Vantage Lite. It's produced by a company called Prinky Romich Company.
Do they have patents on these particular devices, and the patents run out? They make a lot of money when the patents, just like think of a drug, they make a lot of money when the patents are in, and then the patents run out. So when that patent is out, and it's probably out if it's been around for a while, then when that patent is out, that becomes public domain. And it seems to me that we could take those devices, bring them into the public domain, marry them to the same technology that Apple uses, and make a device that would then be accessible globally, rather than keeping it in the arena of a patented, expensive device. Have you thought about that realm, or have you gone down that path?
I think actually, I think the key is not so much looking at the devices, because the devices are all using basically the same technology.
Right.
The touchscreen technology that the iPad uses has been in use in these devices for a long time.
Expensive?
Apple's doing it much better. What makes it so expensive is, in part, I think, is primarily the fact that all the research and development it takes place in a very kind of small arena, and the fact that they just are not making that many devices.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even if every user who needed a dedicated speech device got one, and that is by no means happening, but even if every person with a disability who could use these devices got one, You're probably not even talking about a million devices. And probably talking much less than that. I think PRC probably mm-hmm. probably. I'll put it this way: when Skylar's device was made, the people who were putting it together knew who it was being made for. Like it was actually being made. They're like, this is going to be Skylar's device, and we had worked with because of the book and the kind of publicity that went with the book. They knew who we were, and we had partnered with them. But still, if you thought about, you know, granted, someone in China working under horrible conditions, if it was such a small operation that they knew exactly who they were producing these devices for, imagine how expensive that would be. The key, and it's been the sticking point. It's not so much the devices, but the language systems. The language system that the PRC devices use is a proprietary language. They've got all the rights to use that language, and it is phenomenal. It's Minspeak was the original name of that language, and PRC's version they call Unity. It's not something that if I wanted to make an app that was Unity, I couldn't do it for the legal reasons. And that language system is very robust, and it is the one area that that app developers have not been able to kind of replicate that very, very
robust. So that's the
robust.
Key, what you just said, whereas replicating that language system,
yeah.
Not necessarily the device.
Right. And
I need to understand that.
And
so
there's actually some speech-language pathologists put together a new app. I haven't had a chance to play with it yet. I think it's called Speak for Yourself.
I haven't seen that.
And apparently it's close enough to the PRC's language system that they actually issued a very cranky press release saying, this is not associated with us and don't think. And that press release, I think, actually worked against them. Because what the reaction to that press release that I saw wasn't, oh, how dare they steal PRC's language system. But instead was parents and users who are saying, holy crap, it's out there.
Yeah.
Now there are the possibilities of having that as part of a consumer electronics piece. So,
if you don't mind me jumping in, I just wanted to bring up some of the kind of low-tech stuff, because it's like these are amazing, but like Jordan's arm costs like $14,000. But there's things like Jen wrote an ebook about how to introduce that arm to
kindergarten,
and yep. That's something that like it's downloaded for free.
Yeah,
it's
unscribed, and you know, not just other families in the limb different world. I found out that families in my school district were downloading it and just showing it to their typical kids to just use it as a story about somebody who's different, and we're all different. And that's actually the message at the end of the book, is everybody's different.
The thing I love about that is that's user-driven. That's not something coming out of that's not, you know, something that's coming out of the world of professional, you know, therapists or whatever, but that you're starting to see a lot of stuff that is being driven by people who are living these experiences and putting
and
it out there.
And I
think that social media piece is going to continue.
The challenge
to drive
is getting
that.
It out to everyone that deserves to see it and learn from it. That's
yeah. And these are the things where we're talking about hacking technology. It's like we really need to do what we can to push these kind of low tech that anyone can do. Anyone can produce a YouTube video. Anyone can write an ebook, and it's like finding a central place for this information to be disseminated and getting pulling together a special needs community to really pull together on this. That's a big challenge for sure.
I think another challenge is also the idea of peer review, which is which is not. I think
a Yelp for special needs.
Well, yeah, I think the danger that we see in this sort of social media driven advocacy and information is that there's nothing in place right now as far as peer review that's going to block bad information from being out there.
Totally.
There are, I'm sure that there are just going back to speech language for a second. I'm sure that there are speech language apps that are just not very good and are designed by someone who's like, hey, that would be pretty cool. I could put something together without, you know, kind of the quality control. And I think that's a piece that I'm not sure that people have really started to address that yet.
At the PBS Kids Breakfast, they're integrating a lot of positive behavioral support messages, which is what a lot of public schools use and is used heavily in behavioral therapy. My girls have used it a bunch. They've integrated a lot of the concepts of PBS into their new show, Daniel. Mr. Rogers, but it's animated. And during the breakfast, I texted Jen and I said, we need a site, a technology special needs tech.
That's funny
site.
Because I made one. I'm at South
We're
by.
Like, let's go to the room.
I built a website. Let's do that. So we actually, we have a very simple form.
For now.
Just a little website called specialneedtech.com. And right now, we just launched it to start that conversation from here and continue this. All it is right now is a form, and we just want anyone to throw ideas and concepts out there.
And our vision is really that we'll talk about things like YouTube and talk about, hopefully have app reviews so people can go and find out the real deal on apps to pull together a lot of that information that's out there into one central site.
And not for one specific need.
For any
and every need.
Mm-hmm, 'cause there's everything from, you know, talking about Jordan's arm roll for my daughters, it could be something as simple as an anger issue in the classroom. And there's a lot of kids that aren't classified as special needs that their parents seem to know how to deal with that. So,
yeah. Go ahead.
Hi. I've followed Born Just Right for a while. Can people hear me?
Yeah.
And I followed it through Facebook. I wonder how helpful or unhelpful the Facebook groups and the way that is set up has been for you in maybe trying to get out of those silos, or maybe it keeps you in silos. I don't know.
Well, it's really fascinating. I know that Facebook for me has grown my relationship with my readers in ways that I never had on my blog. Many of my readers never commented, but they comment all the time on Facebook. And they feel like they have even more personal relationship with me. And I do, because then I end up friending them. And so it gets even closer. The one thing that I think is really fascinating is the groups in Facebook. There are dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens of groups popping up with specific needs, and not. It's usually people create it without even knowing that there's one. Because they're all closed, and so it's invite only. Mm-hmm. And I'm not kidding, 12 different limb different groups, and last week two more popped up. I know one mom that's using it as her blog, a group, which is fascinating. What I see is if this brings us all closer and gives us an opportunity to inform and advocate even better or worse, depending on what kind of resources you have. I am a journalist at heart, and I advocate like a journalist. I work my butt off to get as much information for my community and for many other special needs communities, because I've found the longer I'm here, the more I want to know all the other silos, because we really do have so many similarities. When one of, like the limb difference world, I've watched it fracture like in ways I've never. There are so many people that have never asked for help before, so they they're asking for help, but I swear there are so many different misinformation, like it tips and advice about dealing with the, you know, public and how to talk. I'm just really sad and I'm angry and I'm going to be angry at every person that looks at my child with a crossed eye. And anger, teaching your child anger is probably not the coolest way to handle a limb difference. But I mean, it's like those kinds of little moments where I can't go into each one every day and read everything mm-hmm. and say, hey, I have a tip. And I'm not, and I also don't want to come off as, hey, I'm born just right. Come to my website. Mm-hmm. Which I don't want to be like that. So I will leave a tip here and there, but I can't keep up with it all because I also have a full-time job.
There's a lot of fragmentation, and it's like I'm kind of the angry side of special needs. I'm an extremely honest person, and they were both there at the special needs mini conference. I was like, rah, rah, special needs and everything. And I was like, stood up. I was like, this sucks. This is really, really hard. And it's okay to say that it's hard. And it makes me angry to see the fragmentation online right now. It's really hard. I don't necessarily want to call anyone out, but I think it's pretty open right now, so I don't feel bad saying it. But there's a Down syndrome site called Noah's Dad, and he has gone into the media and spoken about how he can't find any positive images of Down syndrome online, and it's frankly ridiculous. He has been talking to Down syndrome blogs. His son is a year old, and he's been talking since he was born to huge blogs that talk about Down syndrome. Kelly Hampton, who's probably one of the most famous bloggers in the country right now, has been writing this amazingly beautiful, she already had an amazingly beautiful blog, but amazingly beautiful, poignant story about her daughter and being really honest about the struggles that she went through with Down syndrome. And so for someone to get up and say, I can't find anything positive online, and that's why I started this blog, and to push that in the media, that just harms us all. It's not about us. It's not about me. I don't have any illusions that the Guavalicious life is going to rocket me to stardom in the blog world, but I'm definitely not going to use my kids to try and make that happen. It's not about us. It's not about the parents. It's about our children.
Right.
And we need to find how we can bring people together instead of being scared and closing ourselves away. I'd love Facebook groups, and they are great, but we also need to have that public voice, too.
I think there is definitely a danger of creating an echo chamber.
Right.
And you see that. You see it on Facebook. You see it. I think Tumblr has been another area that has turned into kind of a...
Reblog.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and so the danger with social media is that, you know, the flip side of sharing all this information is that a lot of the high emotion, a lot of the misinformation can take on a life of its own. So it's very much I think it's very much a double-edged sword.
It is, and I had on my personal bio slide, I'm sorry, Jill, I had on my personal bio slide, you know, I work to support my hobby of advocacy, and all three of us up here have jobs that we work at. Blogging is a hobby, and for some people, passion. You know, with Robert, it is this, you know, is written passion. Hobby is what I call when hobby to me is like I work to live. I don't live to work. And I work to live to be able to do these things. And Jen and Robert have been amazing at really being able to put that out there, you know, Robert with this book, Jen with her community. But, I mean, they're working hard. We're all working full-time jobs trying to do this. So it's hard when you see people just relentlessly shouting out when we could be doing so much more and we're banded together.
So I have two questions. As a mommy blogger who I don't specialize in talking about any one thing in particular, but I have a community that embraces so many parents, children with special needs. What can we do to help facilitate something like this? How can we help be your voice?
That's a really good question.
And you don't have to answer right now.
But I know that's a really great thing that maybe we need to just ask that question to everyone in that.
I had no idea you had an ebook. I would put that link on my site like that. You know, just like, I feel like maybe if you guys just reach out and ask those of us who have a broader voice.
It's a very fine line.
I know, you don't want to be spammy.
I was at Blogger last summer, and I like told them I was going to make a sticker that said, yes, I have special needs kids, because every single person I talked to about going to the special needs mini-con is like, I had no idea that your children have special needs. And part of it is that my girls, it's such a small part of who they are that it's not something that they have to deal with every day. I mean, they have to deal with it every day, but it's not something that's the first thing that's obvious about them. And we've worked really hard to integrate it into our overall lives. We don't make it our main message. But it's a message to me that those of us that have challenges in these lives, we have to be more open about it. And so I think one thing personally, I feel like you have such a huge voice, is to encourage your readers and the people that are there to be open about their struggles. And that's part of the reason I wrote, honestly, about parenting. If we're open about our struggles as parents, people that do have these, and I would say there are so many kids now that have challenges, whether it be food allergies, physical disabilities, invisible disabilities, to encourage your readers to not be scared to talk about it honestly.
And also, one other thing I wanted to know is with, like, the iPod Touch technology, this is just a random tangent brainstorm. So I was considering giving my son my old iPhone when I upgrade this summer, and I was going to turn it into an iTouch for him. And there are so many people who are phasing out of their older generation iPhones. Is that, like, a reality? Can, like, people – could we do, like, a collection of older – and, like – disseminate those people awesome. Who
that's
them?
Something that's been yeah. And I know in my head really right as I was coming to this conference, I really want to get that technology into people's hands. And I think that that's a brilliant idea, is getting people to, I know tons of people, I still have an iPhone 3S, but most people upgrade. And you know, yeah, it would be better to donate it than to sell
both
it.
Both of my kids have old iPhones that are now basically touches.
And that works.
And it totally works.
Because I would give it to somebody who actually needs it before I give it to my son who has like a 3DS and does, you know. But so I'm just brainstorming and we can talk more about
it. I love that. That was a brilliant
idea. That's a great one.
And the other piece
brainstormed.
Yay!
The other piece to that is that so much of the hesitation as far as embracing the technology for kids with special needs is that piece of not knowing whether it's going to work. And so having some other options other than just, oh my God, okay, we're going to go spend this money and we're going to hope it works.
Well, that's with prosthetics.
Oh, God.
I don't know if she'll use it. I don't know if it'll help.
I mean, I can say, like, my daughter's braces on her feet only cost $2,000, and
insurance doesn't cover it.
Only, and her physical therapist isn't even convinced that they work.
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh, I mean, at least Jordan really needs those arms. I'm like, should I put these braces on my child's feet for $2,000 on the off chance that it's going to work?
Because as a parent, you're going to try anything.
Yeah.
Right.
We were talking about this the other night that I was talking about with a group of people, and I was like, I don't think I know any special needs parents who have good credit. because
tell my parents.
there's this whole thing of, you know, if you have this need, you're going to find a way to make it happen. If it can happen through insurance carriers or whatever, that's great. But if it can't happen there, well, we're going to do this anyway, and we'll just figure out the financial side of it later.
Well,
so having possibilities like this sort of technology sharing,
having that donated, and I think that companies are ready to support us on that. Yeah. Is that we have to make the push?
Absolutely.
Can I throw one brainstorm out? I'm sorry, David. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
My little brainstorm has been I haven't jumped, but to become a nonprofit so that I can raise funding for little grants. Like, we do dance so my daughter can work on balance. We do swimming so she can work on her upper torso strength. It's really expensive. And I don't have side cash for it, but we still do it. Would be so cool to raise money so other parents could do that kind of stuff too. People are like, wow, you're really, really busy. I'm like, I'm not doing it just because I want my kids to be busy. I'm doing it for the good of their lives and improvement. So I really like that idea. I just haven't.
And I think of that, I really feel like I need to give a shout out to the state of Missouri and Boone County Family Resources, which is our local agency. They actually do pay for our daughters to do gymnastics and art and dance, and they pay for respite care for my husband, who's about to ask a question, and me, and their therapy. So we're lucky we do have good credit.
They
for now.
Help with, they help with grant money on Jordan's prosthetics. It's just not enough.
No.
It's something, which is awesome. They help us go to camp every
summer. That is the benefit of having twins, is we do have double the time.
Nice.
Yes.
So I love the idea that you of taking cast-off technology and repurposing it for people with special needs. But the other missing equation here is the software, right? There are you need apps to actually help these children and help people and adults as well who have special needs. And there's myriads of different kinds of special needs, as we all know. So I'm wondering how you bring together people who have the expertise in the special needs, that is the scientists or the therapists and the people who understand it with the app developers, right? Because you need app developers who are interested in doing this. And in fact, I suspect there may even be money to be made in this area. So it doesn't necessarily have
That's
to be
why a, I had this
a charity kind of thing. It could be a money-making enterprise.
There is money to be made, and you're going to love this idea. But my idea is that to take all my free time.
They can't do it themselves, right?
They need the
expertise of the experts.
Oh, absolutely.
Right.
Well, one thing I think that if we were able to get this going, I think that people would be willing to donate apps and things that are already out there would be to be able to take, the iPads or iPhones and hand them to people with the apps already on them so they have them. And two, I think that we need to use what we have. I mean, obviously, you can tell we have so much clout in this room. The clout that we have online to push people, push companies to not just, companies are trying to increase their public image. So why aren't we pushing Kinect to do something? I know that Jen has talked to people that can't use Kinect because, part of their limbs are missing.
Yeah, they don't have enough limbs to be humans on Kinect.
So why aren't we, the cost of physical therapy is insane. It can be as much as $500 a session for an hour session. So why isn't there a Kinect game for kids that do physical therapy in their home that parents could do that with them? That would be so, so easy to produce. And I think a lot of companies would have to do it as a charity work, but God, the government spends so much money on things for special needs. Why aren't they spending money on that?
I would suggest that Kinect is one thing. To build an app for Kinect is going to be a lot harder than it is to build an iPad app.
Right.
And iPads are magical devices, right? And I think there are things that probably the special needs community, I don't think there are ways to leverage this technology that only developers and forward thinkers are even aware of. I mean, I don't know if anyone saw the Amber Case session yesterday where she's talking about things where, you're walking around town and it's telling you which way to go and there's all sorts of wearable technology and all these things that could help people who have special needs get around in their day-to-day lives. And you have to bring together the technologists and the experts, and there has to be some way of marrying those two groups together, I think.
Well, I think that there are already a lot of special needs apps, so there are people out there, but I think that there can be a lot of a company like Google that does so much with young people and producing these things. I mean, kind of what I said earlier, I think that a lot of these kids with invisible disabilities are the kids that are going to be doing that in the future. I think our problem is it's not very glamorous. You can't put our kids in an ad. I mean, you could put Jordan in an ad and it'd be like, oh, I totally want to help this kid. But it's like I don't know how to get that message and put the pressure on companies. I thought I was counting on y'all to come up with that. So
yeah, that's where we'll keep brainstorming. I just think it's important for us to start talking about these kinds of things at places like South by Southwest. Mm-hmm.
And along those lines of who can help or who might be interested in helping, I wonder to what extent either physician groups, doctor groups, or educator groups have been, once again, helpful or not helpful in partnering.
I think for educators, the thing that you run into, there's always, in every IEP meeting that I've ever been in, there's almost like a triangular thing at work where you have parents and you have educators and you have therapists. Therapists, I think, tend to be the ones who are pushing the technology the most. Educators, we ask a lot from our educators. I mean, we really do. We ask for teachers to do a lot. And there is definitely a perception among educators, both special education teachers and mainstream teachers, I think probably even a little bit more, the idea that the technology is changing very fast. It's changing faster than they can keep up. And they're already being placed, have this workload being placed on them. So one of the challenges is how to bring a group, a very important group, into the dialogue in a way that is encouraging moving forward, thinking forward, thinking about the next, you know, what's the thing that's going to improve this and make this better? A group of people who professionally are very committed to, I'm just trying to make what I've got work. So I think for educators, that's a real challenge because, you know, teachers, even the really, really good teachers who have low class loads, really the last thing that they want is to be handed the next new thing, the thing, even when they can see and appreciate the possibilities, because we really are, so much of what we're talking about is possibilities.
Yeah, and all our kids go to public schools too.
So that's a challenge.
Yeah,
and I don't know exactly how to get around that challenge. Be happy, enjoy it. I mean, teachers are worked pretty hard.
So districts are cash strapped. So yeah.
We live in a small district, and you can already, we are, what, 25 kids in kindergarten class? I mean, I can't even imagine what it's like in a big school district.
And administrators are dealing with the same thing. Didn't we just invest in this technology,
mm-hmm.
and now we're wanting to move forward? I think therapists are... I think doctors, but I think primarily therapists who are actually out there
mm-hmm.
and doing the hands-on work. I think that's the key because their level of excitement, their level mm-hmm. of enthusiasm, and just the fact that they are spending hours a day, so they're the absolute best. I mean, there is your research and development lab right there.
Yes, and I mean, they're already hacking technology, so we need to give them the financial support to do more. Yes.
Yeah, you just use the right word, like hackathons and things like that. I mean, like that's how you get kind of folks together. I don't know how you pitch that, but
special needs hackathon. That
right,
would be
exactly.
Awesome.
Right. Mm-hmm. So it's just kind of pitching it to the right people and getting people together and saying like, here's your tools and go have fun and solve this for us, and then also. I don't know how this is doable, but it has to be. But like the Google Lunar X Prize, I don't know if you're familiar with that, and the X Prize Foundation. I mean, they tend to right now be tackling bigger problems like oil cleanup and autonomous vehicles and Spaceship One and things like that. But surely they also medical tricorder. That's kind of mm-hmm. one of the cool things they're doing. Mm-hmm. But my goodness, can't they be doing also something to be working on mm-hmm. special needs and stuff? So
that would rock.
You know, yeah. So, I mean, he's working. Peter Diamandis is a brilliant guy, and can't we throw an X Prize at something like that?
Yeah.
Hate to say it, but I think the thing that drives innovation in special needs, in therapies and technologies and ideas, come from... people in positions of influence and power who suddenly find themselves mm-hmm. in a...
Absolutely, where it's a personal type thing. Mm-hmm. I'm probably jumping ahead of you.
So, all of a sudden when it's your kid and you've got power to actually affect change,
mm-hmm.
I mean, it's still something that's very driven by personal missions.
Yeah.
And I don't know that that's necessarily a bad thing, but it is a hard thing to count on.
It is
a hard thing
it's
to
hard.
Count for.
It is hard to count on, especially I think that kind of a theme we've gone to a little bit earlier is that people are in their niche communities and people are scared to talk about it openly. So
it's true. So we have 5 minutes.
And you hear people discuss, I hear this at conferences, and it's always kind of quietly discussed, but if somebody famous has a kid who's diagnosed with something that people
autism.
That are talking about, people are just like, oh, did you hear? You hear whose kid? And it seems kind of dark and weird to be celebrating, but it's parents who understand the reality that, well, here's more exposure, here's somebody who's... It's like I need for there to be an answer for my kid, and I'm in a position to maybe kind of push that to happen. So it's kind of one of those dark humor things when you go to a conference and people are like, oh, such and such celebrity, you know, their kid has such and such. So what's that going to do? It sounds horrible, but the reality is that's the sort of the personal stories.
Well, there's a lot of
personal
dark humor
experience that jumps in. And
special needs world already.
Dark humor.
I know. It's pretty horrible. We could do a whole panel on
dark humor.
Yes.
Jordan has a T-shirt that says, "Dude, where's my arm?" That's how I gauge my friends. If you don't like it, you can't hang with me. Good shirt. Yeah.
I do think it's very funny for me as growing up as a weird kid, and my girls are probably going to be the weird kids. It's a hard line. It's like, we're really lucky that we have therapists that support this, but we don't want to drive the quirkiness out of them. You know, we want them to be who they are. We just don't want them to be held back by that. And that's a really hard thing to quantify for people. And it's getting school districts to put the money in early. Our girls are definitely the type of kid that could be left behind in a classroom, not because they don't know what they're doing. They do, but they don't have the ability to always communicate that, or the ability to keep up with the project that's happening, the fine motor and physical motor skills to do that. So it's really important that not everyone is lucky enough to have a school district that puts money into it. So it's really important that, you know, things like Jen's ebook and Robert's blog and these resources are out there. So yeah, it's taking the next step and trying to get bigger companies to support us, but always just honestly doing what we can right now too.
You know, not to totally disagree with you, but I'm going to disagree with you. I'm not sure it really takes an X Prize level thing. I mean, there are lots of different kinds of special needs, and so there's not going to be one magical tool to fix and help all of these different people. I think it can be done incrementally, and I think it's just a matter of engaging software developers and putting them together with people who understand the needs, and there probably are developers out there who actually have understand both things together, and challenging them to come up with some of these tools, because there's no better way forward than to challenge a developer to go build something, right? And the barrier of entry on an iPad app is very, very small. You know, what it took to develop your reading device probably took, I mean, you know, this is before the mass commercialization of this technology, and so that took a lot of people, a lot of money. The hardware is here; it's just the software issue now. And there are millions of developers out there in the world who like to be challenged to go do things. So I think it's just a matter of finding those people who can go out and build these things for us.
If we could get one or two companies to do even $1,000 prize for an app, you know, I mean, how many? I like have a whole bag of printed material here from apps that are coming out, an app contest, and
or just say, look, here's the market size. Yeah. Here are the people who need this technology, and say, you know, if you sell this for $2 and you sell it to 10,000 people, you've just made $20,000. Is that worth your time to go build?
Well,
I mean, I'm generalizing.
It is.
Here,
part of the problem is no one wants to be. I shouldn't say no one wants to be known for developing, because I think, especially it's up, I think the people that develop them are pretty proud of it. But it's getting this out in technology. I mean, thank God Jen had the idea for this session, and here we are. We have, you know, what, under 10 people in the room. And I think it's a pretty interesting subject. It's just getting it into the mainstream of the technological community is, I think, our struggle. And also, there's no national special needs conference.
No.
Either. So, you know, we talk about, God, a hackathon would be awesome, and that's maybe something we could do in our small city, but how do we get that on the national scene?
Right. Last question, then we have to wrap.
All right. I was just going to suggest if we can't get tech developers, app developers, why don't you go to the colleges or go to places that, you know, have them compete to do things for educational purposes. It's, you know, I hate to say as a college educator, but there's free labor out there.
The speech app that has made the biggest splash is something. It's one called Proloquo to Go. It was developed by a doctoral student, a brilliant doctoral student. But, you know, without an eye towards the financial gain, I mean, he started developing the app and then started looking for, you know, kind of the next step in getting it out there. But the initial work was done by a grad student, and there are a lot of them out there. I talk to them, and they're young, and they're excited, and they don't mind working for nothing. So,
I quickly want to pump out, one, our new site, Special Need Tech. I'm going to be working on that and having it up, and it'll progress, and hopefully that y'all will contribute it. But right now, Jen's community is up for about.com award. And it's pretty powerful. We have a bit.ly link for it. It's bit.ly/aboutboat. So if you don't mind going and voting for that and, you know, tweeting it out on the Twitter, that's, again, bit.ly/aboutvote. And then Robert is going to be signing his book. His book is amazing. I introduced him to my husband, and I was like, remember that book I read when Jane wasn't talking and I was freaking out? I was like, this is the guy that wrote that book. And he's 215, correct?
215.
Where's it at?
It's book with the bookstore. It's the books. It's at
second floor
G.
Convention Center.
Third floor.
Okay.
Ballroom
that convention
G
center
foyer.
Is hard to navigate.
I went and found it, so I wouldn't be wandering around for hours looking for my.
It's just a great book. Robert's a really great writer, and I suggest going and buying a copy because it's a really interesting read, even if you don't have any tie into the special needs community.
Yep. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for coming. It means a lot to us. Mm-hmm.